He's known as the father of USF, elected to Congress 16 times, and in fact never lost an election. He's also a World War II hero, among those who landed behind enemy lines on D-Day. Now in his 90s, our Florida Matters Newsmaker Series presents former Tampa Congressman Sam Gibbons. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Sam Gibbons was instrumental in getting the University of South Florida off the ground. He also helped the then small town of Tampa expand to the limits of the university. And he rode in President John F. Kennedy's convertible limousine through Tampa in 1963, the last stop before that fateful ride in Dallas. Sam Gibbons is now 92. He rolls around in a wheelchair these days, a long way from the days he strode as a political giant in Tampa. He appeared before a standing room only crowd recently with former circuit judge John F. Germany at the downtown library that bears his friend's name. They were introduced by former Hillsborough County Commissioner Jan Platts.
Well, welcome. We are all here at a very historic event. I'm Jan Platt, and I am the president of the Friends of the Library for Hillsborough County. We're indebted to John Mullen for having put this together and for the John Germany Library for hosting this, because this truly is a historic occasion. We have two icons who are here today who have shown leadership with the library, Head Start, the Planning Commission, just about everything that is really of value in our community. These two gentlemen are the instigators. They're the founders. They're the ones who led the way and showed us how to do it. So I'm going to turn the program over now to John Mullen, who is with the John Germany Friends of the Library. And again, I want to thank Sam and John, who are truly legends in our community, for sharing with us today their vision for the future as well as their thoughts about the past. So thank you for coming.
The Sam M. Gibbons United States Courthouse is three blocks away, an important building to those of us lawyers in the community. And, of course, we're sitting today inside the John F. Germany Library. And it's an amazing opportunity for us to have the two gentlemen who these two iconic buildings have been named after. We have the icons themselves here today. I wanted to start with, for both of you, both Sam and John, you grew up in this area, Tampa for Sam and Plant City for you, John, before World War II. And growing up here as young boys, when you think about that time, does anything stand out for you about what this area was like in the pre-war years?
Why don't we start with Sam, and then I'll fill in. How's that?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Jan for putting all this together, Jan Platt. And I want to thank all of you for coming. And I want to say some things that I should have said years ago and put in print years ago. I have never had a better friend than John Fred Germany. He's contributed more to my life and the direction of my life than anybody else. He's been my helper, my advisor, my leader, my savior. Thank you so much, John, for all you've done for me over my lifetime. This man had changed my life more than any one person on earth.
Oh.
He got me into politics. He kept me into politics. He got me elected. He straightened me out when I got off the road, and that was often. You can't have a better friend than John Fred Germany.
Well, let me tell you about Sam. The year was 1950. And there was a group of leaders in Tampa that said, why should we have to worry about not having a candidate to vote for that we would like to support? So Cody Fowler said, well, let's do something about it. And he called a meeting, and the leaders came in, a lot of the leaders came in, and Gunby Gibbons was there, who was Sam's father, and they said, we'll get somebody to run for the legislature. And Gunby said that I will give my son as a candidate. Let him out have, it was a family law firm then, so he could afford to do it. And Cody said, well, I'll give that young associate, John Germany, to help run his campaign as a candidate. Well, the nice thing about it is, that's when Sam and I, and more than just Sam and I became friends, it was our wives became friends. And we traveled the county together. I mean to tell you, this, his dad gave him an old Studebaker, which was unair-conditioned. And we drove the county time and time again. But we'd go to places you never heard of before to run for Sam for the legislature. And he got elected. One of the great things is the University of South Florida. This is a guy that had a vision. And he said, John, he said, there needs to be a public institution that would enable people to get a higher education with being able to drive within the distance. Because at that time, you had three institutions in Florida. You had Florida, Florida State, and Florida A&M. And they were just dominated by the politics of the situation. So Sam said, well, let's get a third university going. And as a consequence, he was in the legislature. Fortunately, we had in the legislature a very powerful legislator from Tampa by the name of Jim Moody. We had to get a bill passed in the legislature, and it was Sam was the catalyst for getting that bill passed. And the bill was passed, you know, the stars were just aligned just right. There were things that were going good, and Sam got the bill passed, but the thing about it is the bill is no good unless it's been funded. So the next legislature, Sam passed a bill to fund it, to start the funding of the University of South Florida. Well, it passed. And in those days, in 1955 and 1957, I was the governor's aide to the legislature. And the bill was on the governor's desk. And you got to understand that Leroy Collins, in my opinion, one of the greatest governors that this state has ever had. But Leroy Collins did not have a real formal education. And his program was for junior colleges. He wanted to create as many junior colleges as possible to bring them close to the people. Well, the bill came onto his desk. And in that period of time, once again, the stars were just aligned just right. And my wife moved back to Tampa. So there I was in the old Duval Hotel by myself. And Mary Call, Leroy's wife, had been asked to go to Europe with her friend. And Roy was in the mansion by himself. So Roy said, John, come on over and live with me, and we'll get all the work done at night. So sure enough, I did. And one of the things that came up was the funding of the University of South Florida. And we discussed it. And we discussed it. And we discussed this. Now, you got to understand that these were powerful forces that were against this. And that is the University of Florida and FSU. FSU, I mean, Roy was right there. I mean, he was in the midst of it. And he kept saying, you know, we ought to have these junior colleges and let them grow. Well, it was very important that we get this funding through. And finally, Roy said, I tell you what, John, I'll let it become law, but I will not sign it, which would get him off the hook of Florida and FSU. And that's all we needed. But once again, Sam was called to do extra duty because the University of South Florida had not been named. So the Board of Regents had to name it. And of course, there was this wonderful cousin of ours in Pinellas County did not want it to be named the University of South Florida because it gives it a persona that they said is not true. It's not in South Florida. So call it
TCU.
Yeah, right. Anyway, BYU or something like that. But anyway, it was one thing after another that eventually became the University of South Florida, and this is the reason right here. Right here.
Oh, God.
Bill Shirley, is anybody here from the University of South Florida beside you? Let me tell you something. Nothing is more pleasing. Nothing is more pleasing than to have somebody like you come up and say, you know, I would have never gone to college if I had not been able to drive to the university and get my education. And here I've been teaching students for 20 years. I mean, that is one of the most pleasant things that can be said.
John, you see them all over the world.
That's right.
Really. Asia, every place else. Yeah. Graduates of the University of South Florida.
Anyway, this is really in Sam's honor, and he did it, and I love him. If there's something can be done, he did it, and he's a wonderful person. So, Sam.
John, you'll be probably startled to know, but I have decided not to be buried, not to be cremated. I have turned my body over to the education system of Florida to teach students how to carve on people and teach them what they need to know about anatomy. So by the time they get through carving on me, there won't be nothing left.
It's often said that Mr. Gibbons is the father of USF and that John Germany is the midwife of USF. I think we now understand why. A story that I've heard is that when it came to drawing the new boundaries for the city of Tampa, the massively expanded city of Tampa, that Sam, you drove around town and basically decided where it should be, and that included where the University of South Florida would be in the new Tampa area.
Yeah,
is that a true story?
50 feet of the University of South Florida at that time. My father had been in an automobile accident in Tampa on Howard Avenue and Morrison Avenue, and he was hit in Tampa and ended up in the county. And with all the confusion of that, I decided we won't draw the city limits along any middle of the street type thing. We would make it go 125 feet behind the center line of the city. So that once, you know, unfortunate things like accidents occur, you'll know who has jurisdiction over the darn thing and not find your father hit in Tampa and Lynn ended up in Hillsborough County.
Well, as I understand, in your years of service in the Florida House and the Florida Senate and then on to U.S. Congress, in more than 40 years in public service, you never lost an election, Sam.
Well, I never lost an election. That's correct. And I listen. This man, well, he was the eyes, ears, and brains of my elections after John. Martha really took over. But if you want to know the reason for my political success, it's been because of John, because of my wife, Martha. Everybody loved Martha. They sort of tolerated me. And, you know, nobody wanted to, they loved Martha. Nobody ever wanted to hurt Martha, so... Then I found out I had one other asset that had never occurred to me. People will forget your face, they'll forget your name, but they won't forget these ears.
Well, one of the great things that Sam did when he was in the Congress, and today he says the reason that they are so divisive is of the jet airplane. Because at the time that he was in Congress, he took his family and lived there at McLean, Virginia. So on the weekends, they socialized with everybody. You didn't make a distinction between a Democrat or a Republican. You became friends with the people of character. And Sam said that the minute that the jet airplane was introduced, all of the members of Congress that would fly off to their homes and nobody would be left for the weekend to socialize with. So you didn't become friends with anybody.
That's correct.
And that was one of the real downfalls of being able to get compromises in the Congress. And I think he's absolutely correct.
Sam, when you think of serving in Congress in the 1960s and with Lyndon Johnson, who had been a leader in the Senate and, as I understand it, controlled the Senate from the White House, what do you recall of Lyndon Johnson in the White House days?
Boy, I could fill volumes on that. It all began right down here on Hillsborough River. I had been elected to the state senate, and I had not gone to the Democratic National Convention out in California. And all of a sudden, they had a little gathering down on the river down here. You remember where the old band shell used to be and on the hotel grounds or Tampa U grounds now? Well, there was Bobby Kennedy. And I said, well, what are you doing here? He says, I want to ask you to be the Kennedy-Johnson campaign manager for this area of Florida. I said, the what? The Kennedy-Johnson campaign. I said, in the Democratic Party? No, we're not going to work through the party. We're going to work through people around the country instead of trying to work through the party. So after a little conversation, I said, well, it sounds good to me. I said, what is my limitation? He said, anywhere you want to go. But it was the Tampa Bay area, and I had to make a living in the meantime. So many things have happened to me right down here on the banks of the Hillsborough. I was born right over at the Tampa Bay Hotel grounds in January 20th, 1920, when it was a hotel. I was just on the other side of the hotel from the river. And so this little riverfront here, from Cass Street down to now what we call Kennedy Boulevard, Sonny and I were Boy Scouts together. We played along here. We used to play capture the flag. That's how we learned how to get rough and dirty and learn how to be parachutists. we didn't jump down there, but Sonny and I ended up in the parachute troop. So he in the Pacific, me in the Atlantic, and it's the Hillsborough River, this little stretch from what we call from Cass Street down to what used to be Lafayette Street Bridge. It's now the Kennedy Avenue Bridge. So I was home.
Sam, tell us how it became the Kennedy Avenue.
Well, as you remember, sadly, I'm sure, Kennedy spent one whole day here in Tampa in the week in which he was killed. And because I was the representative from this area, and I had been his campaign manager down here, it all worked in together, all fell in together.
Well, General Adams was the head of MacDill at the time, and General Adams had a luncheon.
General Paul Adams, and great guy.
And Sam Gibbons, by virtue of his being the representative, included me in that luncheon, which was a delightful thing. It was small. And it showed a great deal of humor that Kennedy had. General Adams was a four-star general, very, very strict. And he got up and introduced the president, and the president got up to reply. And he said, General, he said, you're taught in West Point never to mix politics with your career in the Army, but I want you to know by my doing it, I have become your commander-in-chief. Paul Adams didn't even smile. And I want you to know the twinkle in Kennedy's eyes, I mean, showed you the guy's going to go a long way because he has a sense of humor. And that was just before Sam and the president rode down, which was then Lafayette Street, which became Kennedy Boulevard, in a convertible waving to everybody that was as they were applauding. Sam, that was a great time.
Well, let me tell you, I never realized that Kennedy was as popular as he was with the people until I got away from MacDill and we started using the car. And people had lined up on both sides of the road, cheering, waving, jumping up and down. These are Tampa people doing that. A lot of them thought I was a radical because I was a friend of his. Boy, but the people loved him. And I was privileged to spend almost 24 hours with the president 4 days before he was killed. The last time I saw him alive was when I got off the helicopter at White House grounds about 2 a.m. in the morning, and there was a limousine waiting for me to be taken home to get a little rest, and we shook hands, and I thanked him for the wonderful ride that he'd given me that day and everything else, and for his visit to Tampa. Oh, he said, Sam, I love that. It was fun. I like that place. And that's the last time I had a chance to talk to him.
After that, of course, Lyndon Johnson succeeded him, and it was a great national period of mourning. What do you recall of the transition, Sam, and to Lyndon Johnson after the great heartbreak and disappointment of losing President Kennedy?
Well, nobody really knew what to expect from Johnson, because Johnson had not played a prominent role in the administration. Kennedy liked to keep the cards close to the chest, and he did that. And he respected Johnson, but he didn't really include him very much in his private conversations with everything. Not that he distrusted him. He was grateful for what he'd brought to the ticket and
all
that. Texas. yeah, that's a lot. But Johnson was really a school teacher. Lyndon Johnson was a school teacher in Johnson City, Texas. He really set out to be the education president and became the sacrifice of the mistake of going into Vietnam, as we did.
Well, questions from the audience? I think we have a microphone that can walk around.
Thank you very much for your service to the country in this area. A question I have was concerning your last years in Congress. You had counseled the nation to approach national health care by incorporating more people into the Medicare plan.
Yes, sir.
And I thought that was an excellent idea and would caused us to avoid a lot of problems we're having now. Do you still think that was a good path to take?
Yes, I do. But that would take about 3 weeks to answer that question. You know, we've always had a lot of people in the United States that don't get any health care until they get ready to die, and they drag them up to the front door someplace, and it's too late. And there's a lot of suffering, very costly in human suffering, and very costly in just human cost. I'm talking about dollars now. Caused by the fact that we really got not a very well organized medical system here. We could spend years talking about that one.
Another question? In the front row.
I probably don't need a microphone, but I was just curious about MacDill Air Force Base. How'd that get started?
How did that start?
Yeah.
Some air people back in 1935. Began to lobby for what is now called MacDill Air Force Base, which, by the way, is probably one of the most important command and control centers in the United States outside of the Pentagon. You know, that airport base out there runs most of the world, really. It's got 50 or 60 foreign countries represented, and they're out there as diplomats and come here as, you know, to keep their country in step with ours on military affairs. I can't tell you the importance of MacDill. It's probably, next to the Pentagon, it's probably the most important command and control center in the United States or in the world. And Paul Adams is the one that started it, set up Strike Command there, and Paul Adams, when he retired, helped me select candidates for the academies, and the Naval Academy, the Army, West Point, and other academies like that. And he just threw himself into it. Paul Adams was one of the unsung heroes of Tampa. He set the tone and led the fight to make the controversial integration that had to take place here to comply with the Civil Rights Act of 1965. Where other towns had almost riots in them, Tampa was calm, collected, and got them all done. Now, he was that kind. John, let's go back to politics here. I just thought of something. When we first ran for office, we had a men's committee, we had a women's committee, and we had a Latin and a black committee. You know, all those people kind of work things through when you're planning your campaign for election. Well, We didn't do that, John. After the first couple of times, we just combined them all. We had them all meet in the same room at the same time. We got the plans right. Oh, Lordy.
But I think we have time for one more question.
This isn't a historical political question, but as long as you went back to it. I was just curious. I know by the time, Congressman, you left office, that there had been some pretty uncivil behavior in the country, and there was a lot of polarization. But both of you have been seen and watched the political life of the nation for such a long time. What do you think about what's going on now and the way the country is divided?
Well, I think it's terrible. I think that the members of Congress ought to be up in Washington working their fannies off. They're not. They go up there and demonstrate for about a day and a half, get back on the airplane, fly back home, and go around and make speeches at home. I don't call that governing. That's chaotic. And we just don't have the seven-day-a-week contact that was so essential to keep a legislative body. You know, the United States government is wonderful. We think it's great. You know that nobody on earth ever copied us? Nobody else on earth ever copied us. But we think it's great. I think it's great. But it's not one of the most of the people on earth have followed in just the structure of their government. It's different.
I'd like to thank everyone for coming out today, and most of all, thank Sam Gibbons and John Germany for spending time with us today and sharing some stories. Very much appreciate it.
And thank everybody for coming.
Yeah, that's right.
That's for you.
And that's it for today's show. You can join the conversation on Facebook or online at wusf.org/Florida Matters. Florida Matters is produced by Steve Newborn and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.